Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
And one of the things that Rolf did, and I think it's worthwhile to emulate by all labor leaders at this time, and that is to take an absolutely firm stand against this entire Chicken Little routine. You know the story of Chicken Little, right? Sky is falling, sky is falling. And then there is this effort to panic workers that this is the only thing we can do. We have to make a deal. We have to, you know, do this and do that.
That's the voice of journalist Charles Borland. On this week's show, we speak to Charles about the historic struggle and betrayal of the steelworkers in Hamilton, Ontario. He also speaks about a model that can be used by all labor unions across the country moving forward in this modern era. So stay tuned. I'm very privileged to have Charles Borland online. Charles did the show Wake Up with Co-op for many years, and he currently does the show Discussion. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thanks so much. Nice to be with you, Stuart.
Now, Charles, the other day I walked into a coffee shop and there was a big TV with Stephen Harper there doing a speech. And behind him, he had 10 workers in construction vests. And it was kind of a cringeworthy image of him being the fighter for the working class. Now, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what's happening with the workers under Stephen Harper's rule over the last 10 years, specifically the steel workers in Hamilton and their struggle. Can you talk to me about the kind of chaos and mayhem that this government has been through? Because we don't hear a lot of stories about the industrial sector and what's happening with the steelworkers.
Well, that's a good question. And if I might, Stuart, I'd like to start off by talking a little bit about a rather significant event that took place on July 24th in Hamilton, Ontario, which, of course, is the old steel capital of Canada, where in the olden days you had Stelco producing a lot of steel, and then which was a unionized steel company, and then DeFasco, and that's the old, you know, the days that I grew up in. Now, since that time, there has been a lot of changes in the steel industry there. The DeFasco plant was taken over by ArcelorMittal, which is the number one steel corporation in the world, and then Stelco work was eventually purchased by the United Steel Corporation in the United States of America, and it's the 15th largest steel corporation in the world. The thing about Stelco, or the previous Stelco, you could say the steelworks in Hamilton, and the workers' movement is the fact that back in 1946-47, there was a huge and nation-shaping strike of the steel workers at the Hamilton Works. And it involved not only the steel workers in the plant and their pickets and their struggles against scabbing, and it was a very long, protracted, and bitter battle, but it aroused to its cause the just cause of workers of that day after World War II to have union representation and to have a union that was really fighting in the interests of the workers in the production there, and to build the United Steelworkers of America local in that city. And that strike really is a kind of, if you will, the hallmark or the model of energy and commitment of the workers, their families, the community, to defend the rights of workers, both their working conditions, their wages, their pensions. And that union did battle for many, many decades. Now, what happened on July 24th was that the workers there gathered to honor their outgoing executive members, Rolf Gerstenberger and Jake Lombardo, the former president, vice president, who had been in power some, 13 or 14 years, or 12 years, I guess it was, that they were in office. And they came to office, as you said, when the steel workers were under a very, very serious assault. The local 1005 and the steel workers from 2003 period, when these two workers came to power. And of course, Rolf was well known in the community as a Marxist-Leninist, he edited a newspaper there for many years. He was very active in the community, active in his union. And they, you know, the workers turned and said, okay, we better put Rolf in there because we're under big assault, big attack. You know, in that 12 years, a lot of things were accomplished that are worth mentioning. And I think the number one thing that is worthwhile saying about that struggle of the steelworkers against the efforts to liquidate the Stelco works, to put it into bankruptcy, total bankruptcy fraud was organized at that time. There was efforts by the government, or not actually the efforts by the government, there was collusion by the government with people who were making big scores out of selling Stelco from under out of Canada and so on and so forth. And I would say the great achievement of Rolf's leadership and his co-workers there in the executive was that they were able to renew the union to its founding fighting spirit in the conditions of the present period, Stuart. The present period, as you know, it marks a huge assault on workers' rights, laws going against the workers, anti-union activity at a high point, and many, many unions not being able yet to find their bearings in this new situation of the neoliberal agenda and the corporate assault on the working class. So one of the first things that they had to face was that the CEO of the day, James Alfano, I don't know how you pronounce it exactly, he put forward a demand as soon as Rolf's term began there for a 20% wage cut right off the bat. And what they argued was that the owners were in debt, that there was an equity crisis, and so on and so forth, and that they had to make these huge concessions. And one of the things that Rolf did, and I think it's worthwhile to emulate by all labor leaders at this time, and that is to take an absolutely firm stand against this entire Chicken Little routine. You know the story of Chicken Little, right? Sky is falling, sky is falling. And then there is this effort to panic workers that this is the only thing we can do. We have to make a deal. We have to, you know, do this and do that. So one of the things that Rolf did and the steelworkers did under his leadership at that time was they decided that it was going to be the members, and that the members were going to meet and they were going to be calm, and they were going to take a stand that concessions were not solutions, neither to the steel crisis nor to the crisis at Stelco and or to any other crisis.
I just wanted to add that our government has laws on the books, our federal government, that could block foreign ownership or takeovers if it's not in Canada's interest. Yet with the steel industry, the mining and nickel, they're letting foreign powers take over. And is, if we come back to steel specifically, to shut down production in Canada by these big monopolies. Can you speak to this kind of encroachment and union busting by foreign interests and our government's kind of capitulation to these schemes?
Well, that's okay. So that's further down the road. First, they went through this fraudulent bankruptcy proceeding. Now, it's very important. This is a very good point that you've made, Stuart, because the federal laws are very important in this. For example, I'll come to the seizure of Stelco by the U.S. Steel Corporation in 2007. That's when they made the asset management company that had seized Stelco during this bankruptcy, with the CCAA bankruptcy proceedings. When they seized it, what they did was they sold it off to U.S. Steel in 2007. I'll come to that in a minute. But during the bankruptcy proceeding itself, the blackmail against 1005 and against the workers there was this: listen, you guys, we're going into this bankruptcy proceeding. We've got Judge Farley on our side here. He's going to, you know, do this whole bankruptcy thing. And you guys need to abandon your contract and renegotiate it in the conditions of bankruptcy. What the 1005 workers did was, and this is very interesting took place. These workers, these ordinary steel workers, became masters of reading documents. Now, I tell you, Stuart, a lot of stuff takes place in Canada with the approval of experts who never read the documents. They never read the legal decisions. They don't read the Acts of Parliament and so on. So these workers became masters of reading all of these documents, and they got to know what was in these papers. And one of the things they learned was that in the bankruptcy law of Canada of the day, there was no reference to workers having to abandon their contract. That, in fact, it was considered a separate law that actually trumped the bankruptcy law, namely the labor laws of Ontario, which makes a contract inviolable during the lifetime of the contract. So the workers said, we're not giving up our contract. We're not going to bow to your dictate that somehow bankruptcy law trumps our contract. It doesn't. Our contract trumps bankruptcy law. So they won that battle. And they, like I said, they had read through all the things. And one of the things they did in all of this, they built their confidence, Stuart, by actually organizing weekly meetings to discuss things. They put things on the table. The only promise that Rolfe had made when he ran in that election to be president back in 2003 was there will be no deals behind the backs of the members. Everything will be put on the table. All the problems will be put straightforward. He said, I can't guarantee you I'm going to have solutions in my head for everything, but if we combine all our heads, if we talk things through, if we discuss things, we'll come up with tactics to defend our rights and defend our contracts, defend the steel industry, more than just our rights, defend the rights of everybody, because they became active in many, many affairs. But on the issue of what you raised, namely how U.S. Steel, a foreign corporation, like I said, I think it's the 15th largest steel corporation in the world, stole Stelco and made it their own, they did it signing a takeover agreement with Investment Canada. And that agreement contained assurances of improved production and employment levels, and also guaranteeing Stelco's pension funds and retirement benefits and so on. And they actually wrote to the Hamilton Spectator and assured everybody who would listen to them that Stelco pensions were secure and inviolable and so on. But very soon after U.S. Steel Corporation took over, they started closing down both the Hamilton Works and the Lake Erie Works, which is a much newer plant at Nanticoke. What 1005 did in the face of all that was that it just dug in and it fought not only U.S. Steel to keep its agreement with the government, but began to fight with the government of Ontario and the government of Canada that why were they not defending this agreement made with Investment Canada that Stelco would live up to these agreements. And instead of cutting production, which they began to do quite soon after they took over the plant, in violation of the agreement that they made. When people like myself, Stuart, say, you know, we have to restrict monopoly right, this is a classic example of that. What would be restricting monopoly right in this case? Well, it would be to say to U.S. Steel, it would be for the government of Ontario and the government of Canada to say to the United States Steel Corporation, a giant corporation and a very aggressive corporation, as you probably know, they would say to them, listen, you can't do just whatever you want. You've made an agreement. You have to stick to it. And thereby defending steel production in Canada, and thereby defending the wages and working conditions that the steel workers, since the big battle in 1946-47, had established for themselves over the years, making Hamilton a prosperous manufacturing city, along with many other industries that were there. So you're quite right. The fight for government to restrict the monopolies, these big giant corporations, instead of just kowtowing to them, and allowing them to run roughshod over even agreements that they themselves sign, is very, very important political task for the workers. And I have to say, That has been a hallmark of Channel 5. Now, I met Rolf Gerstenberger, of course, through my political association from time to time, but more importantly, by being able to interview him with Wake Up with Co-op. Over many years, we followed, you know, tit for tat. He took office in 2003. We began Wake Up with Co-op in 2002. So literally for 9 years or so, we would get regular reports on the steel industry, and we covered it very, very extensively, and we covered all the zigs and the zags of the struggle of the steelworkers, mm-hmm. and their maintaining unity and fighting for their rights, as well as the rights of the indigenous people in Six Nations and striking workers in other plants. And goodness knows, yeah. they always had the slogan, in defense of the rights of all, you know, and they stuck to that. So I think it's a very good lesson in modern trade unionism, Stuart, how workers in today's situation, and the big unions, the United Steelworkers, Unifor, as well as and the big provincial unions, the PSAC, and so on and so forth, how we need to overcome, you know, the old ways of doing things, which are no longer suitable for these present times, and build a kind of unionism that mobilizes the workers the way it happened way back when, namely after the Second World War, and even during the 30s and 40s when these unions were being organized.
Thank you so much for that, Charles. We just got a couple more minutes, and it's very clear that this federal government is not on the side of workers. So,
oh, no, that's
just,
for sure.
Just in closing, we have a couple minutes. What's the main lesson that can be learned from their struggle for all workers in this upcoming election? And we have about 3 minutes.
Well, okay, let me just say very briefly, I think workers need to put forward their own independent demands, regardless, to use the right word, regardless of what the political parties are saying. Workers need their own independent politics, and they need to center around, one, developing manufacturing in Canada and a new direction for the economy, two, modernization of democracy so workers can be at the center of decision-making, and three, to ensure Canada's not embroiled in another a series of wars or even a major war for an anti-war government. Workers need to be political, and they need to be engaged, and trade unions need to mobilize their workers to go, you know, to go out for their own independent politics. I think that's the key thing to be learned for this election period. And of course, the aim has got to be the same, which is the defeat of the Harper government.
Thank you so much, Charles, for doing this interview tonight and all the other work that you do to empower workers and make this a better Canada. Thanks again, Charles.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
In closing today's show, we're going to play a song by Dana Lyons called My China Man. Take care.
There are flowers on my windowsill, and everyone looks like the sun. The sun is within everyone, I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are bees in the flowers, rolling in pollen and fun. The sun is within everyone, I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are children out my window. They laugh and they squeal as they run. The sun is within everyone, I can see. see the whole world from my tiny room. There are soldiers out my window, all of them daughters and sons. A sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are planes out my window with weapons that shine like the sun, where all life is fragile and one. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. I see God out my window, and I see that God shines like the sun. Another spring day has begun. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are flowers on my windowsill, and everyone looks like the sun. The sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations. Visit www.latinwavesmedia.com. If you're interested in hearing previous shows, connecting to our community projects, accessing resources, or supporting your efforts by becoming a member of Latin Waves. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.